Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. So glad to be with you this Saturday and every Saturday. I'm basking in the aura of my co-host, Mark Tobin, probably the 34th best fisherman in the United States.
Well, I dropped off a lot.
Yeah, you did. Jimmy Houston said you were really good last week.
He's just being nice.
But he was, wasn't he? Yeah. So, what a nice guest he was.
Love Jimmy. Love his laugh.
Oh, yeah.
Very infectious.
I think he's gone off the edge years ago. Nobody ever told him. You know.
Right.
How was your Thanksgiving?
That was great. Yeah, did I do? 6 deep fried turkeys.
6?
Yeah, little off this year, but more than enough. Have you ever had deep fried turkey?
Oh, yeah.
I've always heard, in every Thanksgiving you see on the news, they do these public service announcements, you know, and you see people that have caught their decks on fire, their house on fire. And I wonder, how can that happen? I've been doing turkeys for over 30 years now. And
you're
I always
old.
Wondered, how is that possible?
Out.
I've never had any problem. Well,
you
I
did.
Found out. not this weekend, but I did have what happened was it was one morning, it was like in the teens, 14 degrees. And it was just taking a long time for my oil to get hot. And it started smoking pretty bad. And I thought, well, you know, it's getting warmer, and it was so cold, I figured it was just steam, you know. But it was going like on over an hour and a half of heating this oil, and I couldn't get it over 250 degrees. And this year, I think I had like about 12 turkeys that I had to do. And I'm thinking, I've got to get this turkey in this oil, or I'm not going to have time. Uh-huh. I'll be here all day. So I decided to go ahead and put the turkey in the oil. And just as the turkey touched the oil, it exploded in flames. And I had flames 4 and 5 feet high. Well, I dropped the turkey in the grease and immediately shut it off. And I pulled the turkey out with just, you know, only in the oil just a couple of minutes. And it looked like something out of a horror movie. The bones were bleach white and the turkey was charred. Black as coal.
I don't think you need to tell it on air, do you?
Well,
I
mean, this is good. It was a good learning experience, but I found what happened was my thermometer was bad. And I didn't know this, but that one got kind of all greased up. So I got another thermometer, and I thought I checked the temperature of the oil. Well, that thermometer went up to 500 degrees, and that oil got, I mean, that indicator got up to 500 just immediately enough. So I'm thinking this oil must have been like 700-800 degrees, and
Mark.
So now I use 2 thermometers.
Yeah.
But the funny thing was, after I got that out and I had to throw the oil away, start all over again, started heating up that oil, and I was standing in my kitchen sink prepping another turkey, and I looked outside, and there was about a 4-foot flame coming up out of that thing. I thought, what to go? I went running out there. Well, when that hot oil splashed out of that pot, it burned a hole in the propane tank, and not the tank, but the gas line. Yeah.
Yeah,
that wasn't a good start to my Thanksgiving that year.
My goodness.
But yeah, make sure you got a good thermometer if you're deep frying turkey.
That's step A.
Yeah, right.
Well, we all got together as a family, and Iggy and Igmar got out of jail and came over to the house, and it was really, really good. I hadn't seen my brothers in years, so. It was kind of exciting.
Iggy,
you know, so,
and
but
Igmar.
They wearing the monitors on their ankles.
And
halfway through the meal, the police showed up and took them both away. I guess they tunneled out or something. I don't know. But we miss Iggy. Iggy's a good boy. My brother Iggy.
Iggy.
He's the ugliest man I ever saw in your life.
Well.
6'7". You know, long schnauzer.
And he wasn't adopted?
I don't know. There's something wrong there.
But we love Iggy. Igmar, we kind of tolerate, you know. He's always about half gas, but Iggy. Yeah, well, we got the whole family together. That was the main thing. For, I don't know, 10 minutes before they showed up, you know. Kind of made it different, but the police stayed around. We ate the rest of the turkey and, you know, good old boy to each other. Oh, what a family, I swear. No, my wife cooked a turkey that was from a 1 to a 10 was 11.4.
Oh, wow.
And the boys showed up, and we had a really, really nice Thanksgiving.
Well, cool.
And, you know, and you think about it, you know, you get emotional as you get older, but you get a lot to be thankful for. You know, there's some bad days, and there's some good days, and, you know, but here we got the family together. And
that's a good thing. I cherish those times, you know, as we get older, and the boy, the family, you know, they've got their own family, and we just don't have our schedules don't mesh up very often anymore. So it's those times
are so special.
That's part
of older. They got their own family, and they go do their gig, and you're over on the other side doing your gig, and you know, it's just it kind of takes a little bit of the fun out of it, but you know, the family's so dysfunctional, you know. So. Iggy.
Iggy. Is that real names?
Iggy Warts is his middle name. Warts.
Are those
Iggy
real
Warts
names?
Ramsey. Huh?
Are those real names?
No, I'm making this up. I'm on talk radio. You can say about anything you wanted to, you know.
Yeah, I believe you.
Oh, what the hey. Shot a tremendous deer.
I mean, you did?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean.
You hadn't told me that.
Oh, world class. It was really weird. I'm in a tree stand, and I hear these bells jingling. And this huge whitetail comes down, had a harness on him, little bells, and he was coming through the woods, had a big red nose.
What the heck?
And we got him. Yeah. Took two farmers and two tractors to get him out of the woods, but we got him out.
Fred Ramsey. So
I think it probably might run some things for some people, but I don't know. I just, you know, a side off of him was 600 pounds or something. You know, he was a big animal. it's just been a weird. I have taken on the challenge, of waterfowling. That's why we always say, "I fail where most people succeed." The challenge of duck hunting. It's been the weirdest duck season I've ever saw in my life. You cannot finish these birds, and you know that's because there's no hatch and there's no juveniles. Juveniles tend to tip into the decoys and it drags the other ducks with them. And this year here, you can get them come and look at you, but boy, you can probably count on one hand or maybe two the ones really hovering over the decoys in the deal. I took some guys from Iowa yesterday, but anyway, I should learn. I don't know. They were awful nice guys, you know, and I'll leave their names out to protect the innocent. Because they're listening this morning, or allegedly to listen. But, yeah, boom. No feathers, no ducks, no nothing. So, finally, I didn't say anything. We went to lunch, and I figured it out. They had to get the menu in Braille. So that's what was going on. Did you ever notice people from Iowa walk with a limp? I mean,
no, I
never
not.
Did. Okay. Well, you've got one eye dead center. There's strange humans in Iowa.
Yes, you are.
I love them all, but it's just strange. You know, they grunt a lot. They don't talk instead of saying yes. They go, And so you learn their language. I think it's a Scandinavian thing, isn't it? Northern Iowa, isn't that Scandinavian people?
You got me. I don't know anybody from
You don't know anybody from Northern Iowa?
No.
You know anybody from Eastern Iowa?
No.
You know anybody from Southern Iowa?
No,
really?
Nobody from Iowa.
Have you lived a sheltered life?
I guess I have, yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
Definitely. You ever been to Ogden, Utah?
Never been there. A lot of places I have.
You used to take a load of sheep out there every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Just the cute ones. We're kind of kinky. I'm just kidding.
You need your blood pressure medication.
I didn't take my lisinopril this morning, so I'm off my feed in the deal. So. You never met my brother Iggy?
No.
Yeah. You're lucky.
No.
Oh, well. I'm going to have... Who made this coffee? It's terrible.
You did.
I did. That's right. I did, didn't I? Boy, we got to put something in this.
You need some
happy coffee. Where's Thompson? We need some happy coffee.
Yeah, right. We're going to have Richard Bowling on at the bottom of the hour. He he did get a monster deer, and it didn't have a red nose.
It didn't?
No.
Mine's red nose and bales on him. You hear him coming forever.
Right.
Yeah, but what the hell?
He's got a 170 and 180 something mounted. He said it's bigger than that.
Oh, wow. I've heard of more, and I saw two big whitetail this week, so we didn't get them all shot. Both of them are exceptional. And this antler restriction thing that I thought I was poo-pooing for years and didn't think it would ever work, I think it's starting to kick in. I think, I'm hearing, I have a lot of 150s this year. Hmm. Jerry Logsdon killed a 150. I think JL killed a 150.
Nice.
I saw, I hate to say this, but I think I saw a 200-class whitetail, and I know that it's not that big, but they're so massive.
Yeah, right.
Impressive. Really, really big deer. And, somebody up around our neighborhood shot a 196 and an eighth, which is an awful nice total measurement for a lot of people
kidding.
Listening.
Yeah,
you get over 150, you pat yourself on the back. You get about one 150 in your life, usually. Some guy got 196 and an eighth. I've heard so many, but here's what happens. You do talk radio, you get all this stuff. Everybody's catching 2-pound crappie.
Yeah, right.
The guy that told me he'd been hunting the same buck for 17 years, but this time of year, I get all these reports of these great big deer. When a guy sent me a picture of a monster 14 point. Well, I got to smell around on it a little bit because it was off the chart. It was shot 6 years ago.
Oh.
The rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say, so what the hey. So we're going to have Richard on.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about his hunt, and he guides on Truman Lake, so we'll talk about what's going on Truman Lake. And I've heard other people say that Richard is as good at reading live scope as anybody in the country, so we'll see if we can maybe get a few tips from him on live scoping.
Now, the rumor I got the other day from an illicit source, he was drunk. But anyway, this new live scope is going to be changed.
I have not heard anything on the new one.
I have heard that this new one is even better.
I wonder how they can improve on it.
I wouldn't have no idea. I guess, I don't know. If this is true. I don't know. You never know. Fishermen tend to kind of
exaggerate a little bit.
Just a little bit.
I'm not going to say lie. We'll just exaggerate a little.
How's my good friend Joe Falco?
Fantastically. He's been enjoying the duck season as well.
Has he?
But getting right here to the Christmas season, if you're looking for something for the outdoorsman in your life, Jackson Kayaks. They've got the Jackson Kayaks out there, and there's just not a better kayak for fishing if you're into that. And that just opens up so many possibilities. If you want to get away from the crowd, that's the way to do it. There's so many city and county lakes in Kansas and Missouri, and this is the best way to take advantage of those things and get away from people. But Jackson's got so many options that you can get on these, and you can get them where you can pedal them, or you can get them with a trolling motor, and you fish hands-free.
Trolling motor works for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And ugly, so what the hey,
Get a live well on them. You can get
electronics. Can you get a kitchen sink yet, or microwave?
You talk to Joe about
it.
If it's possible, he can get
it. I did see some guys. I went to Bob Brown, and some guys coming out with Jackson's. I saw two of them. The camo models, they put a little netting over top of them.
Oh, yeah, sweet.
They slipped, talking about getting away, they went back in the tules in there and got into the ducks. And I washed them.
Oh, I'll be darned.
And so if they wouldn't have had Jackson Kayak, they probably wouldn't have been as successful as they were. They got away from the beaten path, all the rest of the guys.
Great idea.
And they worked them over, too, because they all had limits.
Well, that's the place to go get one, a sportsman out there. And also, if you need your boat worked on, got to winterize it and put it to bed for the winter. Especially if you've left it in the water and it gets the algae and all that crud on there that's so hard to get off. Well, they've got the chemicals to make it an easy job, so they can take care of cleaning it for you. They can winterize it. Whatever you need, they're the best bunch of people out there that you can find in the boat business.
Our new producer this morning is about to have a stroke. We went way over our time.
Are we, Marco?
Oh, yeah, Marco, Oh, no, you're not? Is that just your true color?
You gentlemen break when you're ready to break. I'm just gentlemen. Listening.
Did he call
he
a gentleman?
He is seriously confused.
Oh, my goodness. You need to hang out with me for a week. You know, belching, passing gas, making obscene gestures all day
That's
long.
That's Fred, yeah.
That's me, you know. You're listening to the Midwest. I'm sorry, but you're listening. We only got the three listeners anyway. Don't make a difference. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. I'm here with my co-host, Mark C. here, Tobin, one of the finest fishermen to walk the face of the earth. Before we get back to the show, I got to tell you about King City Lumber, kingcitylumber.com. If you need an outbuilding, whether it's a garage, a loafing shed, a place for your horsey, a place for your tractor, you've always wanted that barn on the hill, the red barn on the hill. Go to kingcitylumber.com. Not only will they beat everybody's prices, they will have quality and workmanship that you have never seen before. Kingcitylumber.com, and I mean that from my heart. They're the finest humans to walk the face of the earth. How's that, Mark?
Can't beat that. Can't,
that's a good, that's I mean it. That's the problem
know, that's
with
the
it.
Thing,
you know,
right?
That's the, we got a fishing expo or something coming up, don't we?
Very cool. For the inaugural expo, the National Fishing Expos is coming to Kansas City at the KCI Convention Center January 14th, 15th, and 16th. And, you know, I'm excited about this because, you know, when I was growing up, we had the Boat Sports and Travel Show. And the best part of that to me was being able to walk around and the deals that you could get on tackle and gear. And that eroded over the years, and it just became more about boats and RVs and things not related to fishing. And, you know, that's okay, whatever. But I really missed the tackle and that kind of stuff. Well, they're bringing this back. The National Fishing Expos is bringing that back to Kansas City.
About time.
Yes, yes. I hope everybody can support this deal. There's going to be over 70,000 square feet of floor space, and so there's going to be there'll be a lot of tackle distributors there. And there'll be the deals that I've missed for all these years that will be available. So that's going to be worth the price of admission right there. But they're going to have like over 60 seminars out there. People like Dion Hibnan, you remember?
Oh, boy, do
son?
I.
Yeah, Dion will be there.
Great human.
Troy Fish Slim Becker will be there. James Worldwide Watson. We've also got Kansas City's very own Brett Chapman going to be
Can
there.
Can we get him back on air someday?
Yeah, we're going to get him back on.
Isn't he the nicest guy that ever walked face the earth?
We're gonna
and he can catch fish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he's good.
Good guy. Just a great guy.
Good guy.
Also, our favorite guide from Kansas, Brian Andreka.
He's going to be there?
He's going to be there, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, you can go online and buy tickets, or you can buy them at the gate. Kids are going to be free with each adult. And they've also got a deal. If you buy one ticket, you can bring a guest free.
Whoa.
How cool is that?
That's about as good as it gets.
So, yeah, if you're into the outdoors, make sure to mark that on your calendars. It's at the KCI Convention Center, January 14th, 15th, and 16th. If you want more information, go to nationalfishingexpo.com.
Man, this is going to be cool. When is it?
January 14th, 15th, and 16th.
That's out by the airport, isn't it?
Yeah.
And let's go out there and just hang out.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of guides there, so you can set up your fishing trips for the year, and it should be great.
Wow.
First year coming to Kansas City, so hopefully we can all get out there and help support them.
That's going to be too cool.
The only downside this year is that, you know, supply chain has affected the tackle industry, too.
Sure.
So, you know, I'm sure we'll have there's going to be a lot there, but we'll see. I know he's working real hard to get as many people out there as he can. It should be great. The people that are running this are just some of the nicest people you will ever meet.
I talked to him on the phone.
Oh, just great.
I was so impressed with that gentleman. He was just
Dave,
a wonderful, wonderful person.
Unbelievable.
And, unbelievable on the deal. So
really excited. Really excited for them to come.
Yeah, this is going to be cool. This is really, really, really going to be cool.
NationalFishingExpo.com.
I got to rat these guys out. I'm sorry. I've been holding this back. I took Denny Kurtz, K-U-R-T-Z. He's got a lawn service up there. Mark, you come up and take some tips off this guy. He's really good.
Oh, well, cool. I'd do that.
And Lee Shackelford, Dr. Lee Shackelford, dentist at large. He's the only guy I know that pulled a tooth out of Charles Manson's head.
Seriously?
No, I'm making it up. But it sounded good. Every time I introduced him to somebody, I said, this is the guy that worked on Charles Manson. And people go, really?
No.
People are kind of gullible.
I'm done believing anything you say.
Well, you know, we do a fishing show. Duh. What do you think? I mean, everybody's caught 2-pound crappie all day long.
Yeah, true.
But anyway, these guys, duck after 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 duck.
These weren't the Iowa boys, are they?
The Iowa boys had that braille thing. They got an excuse, but gee whiz. You know what's weird about it? I don't know where they're shooting. You know, it's just absolutely bizarre, you know. So in my world, what I like to do is we get in and shoot 4 drakes and get out and let the ducks kind of get used to the place, you know, imprint them. I think they're going to run out of shells. I'm going to have to go to the truck and get another case of shells, bring it out there, you know, for a while.
Educated a few ducks.
I love them to death, but their shooting is not good. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've been around a lot of guys, and we've done a lot of hunting together. A guy goes by his gun off the rack, points it down the barrel, and he goes, oh, this feels pretty good. Well, you know, you want the gun shooting 60-40. You want it shooting high. You know, 60% of your shots should be going high. And 40% should be dead on. Because when you come up out of the blind, the duck didn't just hover there like a big balloon, you know, on a string. It's going to get the hell out of Dodge, you know. So you give it the lead that you think you ought to give it. Well, if you're shooting already a little bit high, more than likely if you miss a duck, you shoot behind them. That's just the way it is. But, you know, so you got to tune your gun. And the only place, the guys that tune guns, there's a few people I know around that can actually what I call tune a gun. And it just amazes me. And the guys come with improved cylinders. You know, you got to, you know, if you're going to kill something, let's kill it as lethal as we can, mm-hmm. you know, on a deal to make them suffer, you know, and it, one of my pet peeves, you know. And, you know, it just absolutely amazed me about they all want to go duck hunting, but they don't want to put the time and energy into it or shoot before, you know, a week before, 2 weeks before, shoot a trap leg. You know, if you really want to be a good shot, go up at the KCTA and hang around with those trap shooters. Those guys know more about guns and triggers than anybody I know. And I sit there and shake my head like I know what they're talking about. I really don't. I mean, these guys got speed triggers in the gun. It's a 10,000th, you know, second faster trigger. And that means 8 inches out there, you know, or a foot. And most of these guys shooting behind them, so it means 2 foot. But, you know, you got just everything you do, it's just like a deer rifle. You go sighted in. You know, well, I've been shooting the same gun for 19 years. Well, it don't make any difference. Maybe the gal dusting your house tipped it over. You never know, you know. So, you know, go shoot your rifle. Go shoot your shotgun. Understand what's going on the deal. Get a gun that fits you. It always amazes me the guys come with 3.5-inch shells. Why don't they bring dynamite, too? And when that gun goes off in the blind, I'm sitting down the end. We're in a steel tank, and it vibrates the tank. Wow. And what happens is they start getting out of their gun. They start blinking. They start pulling. As I always tell you, you want to get hit by an 8-pound hammer or a 4-pound hammer. Yeah. We shoot. And all the guys that I know that are what I call professional waterfowlers that are really, really good at their game shoot 2 3/4-inch shells. You wouldn't even think about shooting a 3-inch shell. You can't get them, but they're out of them. But, you know, you start that again, you know, way back in July when you buy your ammunition, you know, so you got it. But why would you want to get hit with an 8-pound hammer?
No. No thanks.
And it just amazes me, you know. And, boy, you can just feel it in the air when they shoot them things, you know. And you go, come on, guys.
How do you fit a gun?
Well, what you really want to do, when you throw that gun up and you look down the rib, you want to see about 60% of your rib. That means the gun's shooting high. If you're looking straight down, all you're seeing is a bead, the gun's shooting dead on. So, you know, you need to understand it. A lot of professional-grade guns, you can put shims in the stock. And also you can extend the stock, you know, the butt pad. You can put a 1/2 inch in there, 1/4 inch, and shoot it with the clothes that you're going to be wearing. You know, if you're going to be wearing a big, heavy jacket, which you will in this kind of weather.
Yeah, right.
Shoot the gun with what you're going. Even in July, if you're going to shoot the gun a little bit and tune it, put on that heavy duck jacket.
That
it won't
sense.
Take you long.
Yeah,
you know, put on that jacket, mount up the gun, and shoot it on paper. You know, do anything. Shoot it on paper is the best thing on the deal. But they've got this syndrome. I call it the Dirty Harry syndrome.
Bigger,
you know,
better.
Yes, bigger is better. No, it's the most powerful handgun in the world. You know, you don't understand it. You know, when I was shooting with the pros, with these guys from Winchester and Federal and all those guys, a 3-inch shell didn't come across their vocabulary. Hmm. Wasn't even in their head. Wouldn't even think about it in the deal because they know.
Yeah, right.
And if you take a 3-inch gun, the majority of them, not all of them, you can't believe the holes that are in your pattern. Hmm. And it just absolutely blows my mind. Every year I go through this, and I don't know why it upsets me, but I hate seeing anything crippled. I want shot through the head. And, you know, when if ducks come in and if you happen to hit one, if his head goes back over top of his body, he's lost control. He's dead. He's in the air. He's croaked. But if he's got his head up, you better get another load on him on the way down, you know, on the deal. It is amazing to me. The guys that are just not in tune. You know, they want to kill something, but they don't want to suffer the prices to kill something.
Or just ignorance.
Yeah, and educate yourself. There's so many tapes out here, so many videos on the deal. Oh, well, I'll get off my high horse on this deal, but what the hey. Hey, we're brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, my favorite sponsor. I love these guys more than you'll ever know. Getting in, trickling in, the 22 Chevrolets, not all over the lot yet, but they're coming, probably right out the first year, 30, 40 days away. There are going to be an awful lot of them around. But if you want to be treated professionally, treated right, with a family who cares about you as a person, then you'll go to Reed Chevrolet up in St. Joe, Missouri at Frederick. You can't believe the people that drive from Kansas City up to St. Joe to buy their vehicles because there's no hassle. Mark, you went through the experience with them. They didn't hassle you, did they?
No, it was, I guess, good and bad. I spent 3 hours up there just talking about hunting and fishing.
Yeah.
Buying the truck, it took no time at all.
About 20 minutes or less, on the deal.
But the salesmen, they're not commissioned, and there's no pressure on them to make a sale. So, they just help you buy a vehicle.
And you walk in their dealership, and you hear them giggling and laughing.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
There's
no pressure, no games.
People having fun buying a car. Yeah. Whatever happened to that?
It's so refreshing.
Yeah, it is.
It's a fun way to buy a vehicle.
Yeah, Reed Chevrolet. Sure. They're the finest people. I love Trevin to death. Love the whole family. It's just class people. So if you're in a mode and you want a brand new one or they got a great selection to use, Reed Chevrolet, St. Joe, I-29 Frederick, 28 minutes north of KCI if you drive like you have no common sense. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We'll be right back with you. We just come back with music for the rest of the show. What do you think?
I like it.
What's the name of this song?
What is it, Rocco?
Mark Marco. What is
Hello.
This? This is,
it's the Stones.
The Stones, we know that. Oh, God, getting old ain't what's cracked up to be, I guarantee you. Wow, how could you forget that?
Marco, you do good.
This Marco
good
is
music.
A wonderful yes. human, isn't he? He's almost as good as Blake.
Almost.
No, but at least Marco, after the shows over, gives nice presents and that kind of stuff. It's awful nice. And Rolex watches, boy, that was nice.
He was there before we were this morning.
Yeah, he was. He was on his A game, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Blake slides in here with 3.4 seconds left.
He makes it interesting, yes.
Yes, he does. Yeah, I don't blame him a bit hanging out with us. Who we got as a guest?
Our favorite guide over in Truman Lake, Richard Bowling. Richard, how are you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, thank you.
You getting ready to work today?
Yep, I just pulled off the side of the road, got the boat hooked up. It's time to go catch about 5 lemons of crappie.
Oh, my gosh. Well, before we get to talking about the crappie, you had one heck of a deer that you shot last week. Tell me about how the hunt was, because I had talked to you before you had got this monster, and you hadn't really seen a shooter. So what happened prior to this, and what happened during that hunt?
Prior to that hunt, that was on the last Saturday of the rifle season. I'd set my stand from daylight, or I usually get in about 30 minutes before daylight, sit in the stand sometimes, sometimes a ground blind, and I had a pretty good chunk of ground, a lot of open ground and some river bottom behind it. And just wasn't seeing any shooters, see a lot of, not a lot even, maybe 2 to 4 8-pointers a day that would score maybe 100 inches, just nothing to get you hyped up. There was a lot of sign, but no sign of a giant buck in there. And I'd get kind of lax on my sets. I'd sit with my wife the first weekend. I always sit and spend time with her in the blind. We'll sit most of the day, but
wow,
you know, when you spend that many hours in the blind and you're not seeing a shooter or even something that'll even make you think to get your binoculars up, you kind of lose your machismo, I guess. And anyway, I hunted the first weekend with her, and we never seen a shooter. Then I hunted Monday, rest of the week by myself. But I got to, you know, I got to go into the blind, and it's not typical me. I usually sit, you know, pretty much all day, but I would come out at 9:30,
wow,
10 o'clock, go eat lunch, and just sit in the restaurant and visit with the family. I got a lot of family that comes up. And, you know, I just didn't spend the time in the blind that I usually do just because I didn't know there was even a deer like that in the world, really. And I, Saturday evening, I was on the phone where my wife would call me. It was at 4 o'clock the night that I shot that deer. And she'd called me, actually. I got her on the other side of this property, and she's in a blind. There's somebody in there that wasn't supposed to be, we thought. So I started calling the landowners around, make sure somebody didn't cross the line on accident, whatnot. And I've talked on the phone for 4 different people for 2 to 3 minutes at a time trying to figure out. And then I finally called the right person, and he was down looking at a slough. So I done made all that noise.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's probably 4:15 then, and I'm thinking, man, I'm hunting real close to a bedding area. A real thicket, that's my only hope. And, you know, I grabbed me a big old handful of sunflower seeds. It's a split tree, as a 20-foot in the air. Made some noise getting sunflower seeds, kind of nonchalant, because I just thought the hunt was over, period. And, man, yeah. I tell you what, I took a bunch of them sunflower seeds, and I turned over to my right. And coming out of that thicket, I could see the horns on the left side, his left antler. And I thought, man, that looks pretty good, but it's probably one of them little 8-pointers, so... I got the binoculars up, and it's a thick in there. You really can't see what they are until they come out in a little opening there. And, man, he came out, and he turned to the left where I could see that palmated side on the right. Not me, man. Finally, a shooter and an old deer. And as a rule, where that's at, I've had that stand in that tree for about 20 years. And I used to hunt it hard, and I haven't hunted it that much in the last 5 or 6. But they usually turn left, and they come right. It's a bow stand is what it is because I'm so tight to the bedding ground. And, man, that dude turned left, and he was coming just like on a string like he's supposed to.
Wow.
And then he kind of stopped. And I've got my gun. I'm shaking. You know, I didn't think I'd ever get buck fever again, but when I see something like that, I did, really. I'm shaking. I have nothing to rest on. And he's coming to me, and then he stops. He turns right. Didn't know I was around. He wasn't with a doe. He wasn't. All we had around me was him and squirrels. And then he turned right, and he kind of veered going away from me. Now, man, I mean, he gets about 20 more yards, he's going to get behind some bulldoze stuff that I'll never see that deer again, probably. So he stopped behind one tree. The only hole in that tree was at his vitals. So I'm like, man, I got to make this shot count.
Wow.
And I'm running that through your head, and, you know, you play things out in your head all the time, what could happen on a deer, see, you know, deer come in and whatnot. Anyway, stopped right behind that tree, give me the vitals, and I'm still shaking, but he was only about 60, 65 yards,
oh, wow.
And I made a shot, but there was so many squirrels around me. Man, there's a hollering and a jumping and a running and, you know, a bunch of noise. But I thought I had to hit him, and I listened real close, and I thought I heard him crash. And, man, I couldn't get out of that stand. I let him sit for at least 15 minutes. And that's a long ways up in a 20-foot tree stand.
Yes.
You're strapped in. You got your gun and your bag and everything hanging on the tree and trying to get all that to get down and go see what happened. And, man, I finally got on the ground. I took a bunch of my clothes off and just put the orange back on and took the gun, and I eased over there, and that dude went about 20 yards, and there he laid, and I really didn't know. I know he was big, but not that big until I got my hands on him. I, holy moly. And,
he good.
Just a blessing. Just a lot of luck, I guess.
Yeah. Boy, he's quite
well,
dear.
And after everything, all the noise and the sunflower seeds, and still, was that the last day of the season?
No, we'd had Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday left, 3 days left, but, you know, I'm just, I can't stay out of it. I sold my house, and I got a lot of things on my mind. So I just wouldn't – when you're not seeing a shooter buck or seeing something even in distance, and I can see a long ways where I'm at, out in the open and bean field and stuff. And when you're not seeing nothing, you just kind of lose – I don't guess interest, but you lose hope, I think.
Yeah, right.
Hope, yeah. That's part of it.
Well, Greg Thompson was kind enough to put your pictures up on our Facebook page, which is Midwest Outdoors, cool. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Yep. And you've got it on your Facebook page, do you not?
I do, yeah. I'm going to make it my profile picture. You know, I've got two other bucks that score way up there as well as this one. And when I put this one beside them, to me, this is the biggest I've ever shot. But I think when you put a ruler on them, I think one of the others is the biggest. So, yeah. I don't know, just the trophy to me, and I don't know, in my mind, he's a 200-inch deer. I know he's not, but, boy, he sure looks like it. Boy,
the pictures look like it, I'll tell you.
Yeah, he does.
How big is the base on those?
A little over 8 inches on each side. And he carries that mess all the way out.
Wow.
Now, he's really a typical eight-pointer, but he's got forked G3s that start about halfway up, and they're 8 or 9 inches long where the fork is. So.
Wow.
He's an excellent animal. I've never... And it, you know, the picture looks good, but if you walk up to that deer and put your hands on it and really get to look at it one on one, your draw's gonna drop.
You know, I've been lucky to harvest a few, and boy, I tell you what, you walk up on them and it's that moment, you know, when nobody's around but you, and you just, I can't explain it to anybody, the adrenaline rush that you get, and you look down and you go, wow, it's over, I got him. I wish everybody could have that experience once in their life. It's exhilarating, you know.
It is. Yeah. I think I was high-fiving myself. Then, you know, last year, a year ago, my wife, pretty same farm and stand she was in the same day that I shot this big buck. She had shot a deer with a 6.5 Creedmoor, but I guess she must have hit him in no man's land, but he went straight to the ground, and I went across this loop. I had that dude antlers in my hands, and he was trying to stick me, but he couldn't move, you know, and I didn't want to shoot him point blank with a 6.5 Creedmoor again, so I had my boy up the hill, and I was going to go get him and my grandson and get a bunch of pictures, and I'm going to drag him out. Man, when I came back, that deer was gone. That, I guess she just knocked him out or knocked him silly for a minute.
No.
Never seen the deer again.
Yeah.
So I'd gone about 50 yards away from that big buck, and I was on the phone with everybody I need to call and tell them what I did, and I was shaking and this and that, and I was about 50 yards away, and she said, "Are you sure that deer's dead?" I had to go back and kick my deer to make sure he was dead, so he wasn't gone.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Wow, what a whitetail. He was good. That's a great story. The one I got, you know, got a red nose and had a harness on him. He was a big deer, field dressed 650 pounds. Took two tractors and two farmers get him out of the timber, but we got him, by golly. You know. Somebody will miss him on December 24th somewhere in there, but we'll see.
Well, they all taste good, though.
Yeah.
So, do you eat deer meat?
I eat a lot of deer. We kill, we'll go through 5 deer a year, me and the family.
Wow.
Out,
oh,
my gosh. Just me and my wife at home, but I process my own. I got a big grinder, and we don't buy much beef or nothing. Buy a little bit of pork once in a while, but no, we eat a lot of deer, love our deer. There's so many ways to cook it. We grill it, we fry it, we marinate. We just do everything with it. And we don't really get to shoot a lot of bucks because, as a family, we will not shoot it in case it goes on the wall. So that's kind of our deal with the farmer. We've been in there all these years, and a lot of years just come away with a bunch of does, but it's worth having a good place to hunt. And,
sure.
You know, I'm not going to shoot a 110-inch deer because that just throws down the bone pile and you do nothing with it, so... My belief is, you know, as much as I get to hunt, if it's not a true wall hanger, then I won't shoot it.
Had you seen this deer before this?
No, that's what, you know, I've had that question a lot, and people think I lie to them, but if I knew that deer was in the woods, as hard as I hunt, deer season is my absolute favorite time of year. Mm-hmm. I like to hunt, I like to hunt all day, every day, and on the last day of season, and the last 3 minutes of daylight shooting monster buck because I like to hunt them that much. But no, I did not. If I knew that deer was there, I would have never. I'd have got in my tree, and I never got out of it till dark every day because that's how hard I hunt. But no, I didn't even put cameras out this year because last year we never got a picture of a true trophy, and the farmers around they didn't know he was there. There's nobody in the country that I know of that has a picture of this deer.
Wow, that's insane.
Yeah. I just, you know, a lot of things go through your mind. Had that deer been there all year? Was he run in from the neighbors? Was he? They're finding now these deer move a lot more than what they anticipated, I think. And a lot of things go through. How old a deer was this? Got any idea?
He's a younger deer. I'm going to say probably 5 or 6 years old.
Wow.
My grandson killed a nice 9-pointer in there, and, you know, he's 8 years old, so we found a 9-pointer that needed to be shot, so we're mounting it as well.
Sure.
But it was a time and a third the size of this deer.
Wow. What a deer.
Yeah.
What a deer.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. That's an emotional to me. You know, that's a tremendous. At your age, you know, that's even more important. You know, he knows in his deal.
So I guess two things to take away from that. Number one, don't give up. But number two, talk on your cell phone and eat sunflower seeds.
Yeah, make as much noise as you can.
Yeah. Rattle him right in.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah. Go look at the pictures of that. It's impressive. Yeah. But so anyway, now you're back to making a living.
Reality.
Yeah. How is the crappie fishing?
Man, I went to back to work on Monday, and it's been game on ever since. And I've hit, I think I told you on the phone last night or one of the other guys, that I've hit in the last 4, 5, 6 days, I've hit 5 major creeks, and I'm fishing the mid-grand, and we're catching limits of fish. Whatever creek we choose to fish, of course, we're live scoping them, getting limits of fish in every creek. Yesterday I had guys from Illinois morning and evening fished two different creeks. The first group is 3 guys. They got all 45 in one little area, one creek in the very back. Second group, I took Plum 10 miles away to another creek trying to find big fish, and they got their 2 limits and never left the creek. So they're really good bite. Fish are very, very tight to structure. There's no roaming fish that I can find at all. Everything's got their nose butted up to a tree. You can't really pitch to them because you're hung up all the time, but I with a 13, 14-foot pole, go up there and ease it down to them. And it's a good bite. They come running out to get it whenever they see it. But a lot of times you got to hit them and let them know that bait's there. They're so tight to that structure.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
You have to use minnows?
You don't have to. We got our limits Monday on a little brown hair jig. Just the goofiest-looking color you've ever seen. But, man, they was gobbling it up. It was actually... We had pitched to the tree and just opened the bell and let it fall right down to them, 16th ounce. And they was only down about 3 feet, which made it really easy. And, man, they was just waylaying that.
Hmm. Have you ever, go ahead.
I will be using minnows all day today. I got a big old bucket of them, so I got 2 more groups from Illinois, and we're gonna use minnows all day.
You know, I analyze things too much, and I wonder why. The top one to me, why would they eat anything chartreuse? Because there's nothing chartreuse in the water.
Right.
You know, and here you get this little brown thing, and they're smacking it. I'd like to talk to a crappie sometime and say, why did you do this?
Yeah, you want to know if they really truly see the chartreuse color, if it changes colors to their perspective in the water. I don't know, but... You know, I used to not be a big believer in colors, but the same group about 4 years ago, I had them in here from Illinois, and, man, I picked up the rod, and I caught my limit. I was going to have a fish Friday, so they let me have my limit. I caught it on a brown and orange jig. It looked like a crawdad. It's early season, and I put on a show. You just pitch close to them, they eat it. So then his son, which is about 16, sat down beside me, and he caught his limit with it, and the older fella in the boat had a new pole he's wanting to try out. Well, he started pitching with it, his pole, and another hair jig that I had made up. And he pitched and couldn't catch him on that color. Picked up another color, same thing. Picked up another color. He went through 3 colors, never caught a fish on it. I said, go back to this color. So he picked back up my color and went back to it, and he waylaid his limit.
No,
so that
kidding.
Day right there showed me that the color is a must.
Yeah, right.
It's strange. It really is. You can't analyze. I mean, there's no rational thinking about it, I guess. Maybe there's a bug in the water at that color, or the way the light infracting on the water.
Well, and I'm sure fish don't see the colors like we do.
I don't think they do.
No. And that's going to vary depending on water clarity and whether there's cloud cover or, you know, a lot of factors that would go into that.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of, you know, and then, too, we have the big mayfly hatches, and then you go to anything green or something. And, you know, I think it's kind of matching, you know, when the little crawdads are out and they're eating them little things in the water floating around, swimming around. I think it has to do with the hatch that time of year, what time of year it is, and, like you say, the color of the water.
Yeah. It's so many factors. If anybody tells you they figured it out, they're lying fishermen. You know, it really is.
And a live scope will teach you more about a crappie than anything. You know, it'll show you that color does make a difference.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Just because the way they react to it. You see the way they react to it.
Yeah, you know, you can put on maybe today, put on that same brown and orange or brown or whatever and pitch to them. They come up and run to it and look at it, then turn their head and do that about four fish. You think, man, they want something different. So then you pick up a different color and pitch it, and they do the same thing. Then your third curly you choose, they're swallowing, you know, they're killing themselves swallowing it deep. So you got to play with a lot of colors.
I've heard that you can interpret live scope as good or better than most anybody in the country. What has live scope taught you about? Has it taught you anything about crappie fishing that you thought you knew?
I didn't figure they bedded their heads up against the tree as tight as they do. I've seen several fish run down and eat a bait. I use a big hook and a big sinker when I'm minnow fishing like I'm going to be today. And if you drop too fast to get in front of them, they'll eat that sinker every time.
Really? No kidding? Wow.
Oh, yeah, and this is a half-pound sinker. They will gobble that thing up and carry it off 5 feet. And of course, the client's got it at the hook, but I say, no, it's sinker, sinker, sinker. But they'll grab that sinker and run with it.
Yeah, how can you ask at the hook?
Yeah, you got to. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. And you can target, I mean, you know the size of fish that you're going after. So if you come up to a tree and you see nothing but little fish, you don't even try it anymore, do you?
Nope. I can look at that tree and I'll tell you how many keepers are in that tree. It may have 10 little ones and 2 good fish. A lot of times you can run real quick down to that fish with your big hook and sinker. But more times than not, when I'm little fish, you're going to get to it first. So then you're going to catch that little fish.
Yeah. Hmm. Amazing.
Amazing technology. So. Yeah. This... So
we will probably today, out of 5 limits of fish, if we catch 5 little fish today, it'll be on accident. Because we don't drop if there's a lot of little fish around. You know, we just try to, once in a while, we'll come screaming across and eat it. But we won't catch 4 or 5 little fish all day today.
Hmm. Boy, that's, hey,
Richard, I got to ask this question. My co-host here brought me some really nice walleye. I think he caught an 8, uh-huh, and a 5, and a 4 in one afternoon over there. Uh-huh. So... And it's wonderful to eat. Oh, my goodness. I've got a picture of the food cooking in the pan. That's how important it was to me. But can you go out? I mean, you're the best on that lake, I feel. Can you go out in an afternoon and catch nothing but walleye?
You know, I couldn't. If I said I could, I'd be lying. I cannot. And I've had people wanting walleye trips, and I just, nope, I won't do it because when I set my goal today, my goal is everybody in this boat that's going to step foot in my boat today to catch a lemon or crappie. If I told them I'd catch a lemon walleye and take their money, I would never probably, if we caught one, it'd be luck. We've caught some, yes, but it's always on accident. I would never tell somebody I could go out and catch them and take their money. Nope.
Richard, now there's a guy that I was told about on Truman that targets walleye. And maybe you know him.
Yes.
He's a guide, and he's good at it. So does that tell,
yep,
you anything? I mean, couldn't you do it?
I could, yeah, but he trolls a lot. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Tony Gallant's his name.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he trolls a lot. He takes some of my buddies, and they have a great time, but we're trolling. I'm not a big time, I'm not a troller.
I'm with you.
I don't like doing that, really. I'd rather cast or dip on them or something. And yeah, we did. We dipped a 28 and a quarter incher this year, and that's the biggest I've ever seen.
Wow.
on Truman Lake. It was an accident, but we caught it, and it was a giant walleye. I've caught several walleye. I've probably caught 8 this year, you know, while we're crappie fishing, but it's all been on accident. It's not been because I knew that was a walleye and we caught it.
Yeah.
Well, and you've got clients, and you know, catching 15 crappie as compared to catching a couple of walleye in a day, that's a big difference when you can get the kind of action that you get.
No.
With the crappie.
Yep.
Well,
no, that's... no. Catch the walleye and eat them. Cut their heads off. Eat them. My goodness, your priorities are all jacked up, Mark. Jeez.
That you know, we had that cold front. I don't know if it was as severe down there on Thanksgiving. You know, it got from the 60s into the 30s and lows in the 20s on Thanksgiving. Will that affect the bite at all?
No, I was out yesterday, and it was absolutely on fire. And caught a lot of fish, just 2, 3, 4 feet on the surface,
wow,
of the water. No,
it
don't hurt them at all, huh? Mm-hmm.
How far back up in the creeks are you going, the creek arms?
I'm going to go until I turn a route out. When my graph reads about 7 to 9 feet, I'll spin around and fish my way out. Of course, I'll pick a creek where the wind's blowing in it because I like to put the head into the nose of the boat into the wind. It's easier to live scope that way. And get back to 7, 8 foot of water, I'll spin around, and I'll just start fishing my way up.
What's the water temperature now?
Yesterday it was about 45, 46.
Still, I'm surprised it's still that warm. Well, so when will they? They will start moving out of there, moving more out toward the main lake, will they not?
They will, but the water's going to have to cool off a lot more. I see we got some, today's 57 degrees, tomorrow's close to 60, so we're not going to lose any water temperature. So they're going to stay in them creeks and keep feeding up for the winter for, it could be another month or two if it keeps on this kind of weather.
Mm. What's your favorite time of year to fish?
If I had to go out and pick them 2 months, it would be February and March. They're in the same areas. They're moving back to the creeks. They're from their winter haunts. They're way up in the water column. They're not stuck to the trees. They're cruising, and you can take that 14-foot pole that I use, tie a 16-ounce jig, 8-ounce jig on, and just swing it out or swing it out to them, bring it by their nose, and they're going to eat it. You don't matter the color that time of year.
I love this time of year, November, December, and there's not near as many people out on the water. I love it.
Yeah.
And those fish get in pretty big groups. Yeah, that's a pretty good time.
Richard, before you go, you got any mallards down that way yet?
Just a local duck that's been here. We've not had a big push in here. My son was out yesterday. There's a group of five of them. They all shot their lemons and mallards and little or trash ducks or little ducks, whatever. But they're on a private farm. They kind of come in there and stay all night. Just kind of a good spot. But on the lake, I'm not way up in the river where the ducks are, but I'm close, and I'm not hearing a lot of shooting. I never heard many shots at all. I heard two volleys yesterday, and usually up there you hear them banging around. But I never heard much yesterday. Now, today, maybe I'm sitting here on the lookout now, and I've seen two little groups go over here to look out by bucks also. Maybe there's a few birds come in last night.
Well, if somebody would like to get a hold of you and take a trip with you, how can they get a hold of you, Richard?
Give me a call at 660-351-5361. Also, follow me on Richard Bowling's Guide Service Facebook page. It's nothing but fishing and hunting, and you can look at that deer and see all the fish. Now, yesterday we never took a picture of a fish, but today probably we'll take a bunch of pictures. So,
give me that phone
see
number.
See what's going on daily.
Give me the phone number one more time.
660-351-5361.
Are you still doing the round table, the Truman round table?
Yeah, we was talking, me and Tyler Mahoney was talking last night of when we're going to do that and get set up for the Christmas party. So, yeah, we do once a month. We do that.
That's awesome. Awesome information. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Richard,
thank you so very much. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Thank you.
All right,
and congratulations on that deer.
I've stoked the ire of my Iowa boys. They're calling here on the hotline.
Oh.
And they're mad. They just have to get over it. You know, fry an egg on top of their head, I think. They're mad. They're stoked up. Dave Hansecker. I swore I wouldn't say his name.
Oh, darn.
He's got the best dog I've ever hunted over.
Is that right?
Oh, unbelievable. This precious dog.
Cool.
Precious dog. Smart, intelligent, behaves.
Nice.
You know, got to mind my third wife. We got to go for this week.
That went fast again.
Yeah, it did. Why don't we go to 2 hours? Marco, you in? He don't care. He's just here. That wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Dave, I'm sorry I couldn't get to you, but we'll get you on one of these days. Got to go for this week. The next time we see you, I hope we see you in a great outdoor.
Have a great week. So long, everybody.